the forces of evil. We're going to go to that from Ephesians. We're going to go back to the book Job. And then we're going to go back to the split kingdoms of Judah and Israel. We're going to look how the forces of evil work there. Ephesians, the sixth chapter. Now, the book of Ephesians is like an eternal letter. This letter is like right out of heaven, but it tells you about the good and the bad. And Ephesians, the sixth chapter, and start in verse 10. Now, I'm not going to read this from any translation. I'm going to read this from Greek, okay? I'm not going to read Greek to you. I will tell you a Greek word now and then, but I will tell you basically what it says here, because it's better than any translation. But to the ones remaining is what it says here, Ephesians 6 and 10. Be ye dressed up in the Lord. Dress up in the Lord. Dress up in the Lord. And in the might, krate, that is a powerful might, the might of the exous, that means his strength of him, and his might and his strength. And in verse 11 it says, bind on the whole panoplion, the whole armor belonging to God, so that you will be able to stand. That word to stand there, it's infinity. Because you're going to have to stand and stand and stand and stand. And you will be approached by the forces of evil. The closer you get to God, the more you're going to be abused by Satan. Mm-hmm. And the more that he's going to use people to abuse you. Mm-hmm. Jesus said, the world hates you. But don't worry about that, because it hated me before it hated you. And Satan is going to use every absolute dart, implement, contrary to your well-being against you. When I baptize people, I baptized a person here a while back. And this person, I encourage them after the baptism that now that all the forces of evil will be leashed against them.
Mm-hmm. Got a target on your back.
Because they have now really made a effort and a commitment to the Lord. And it happened. It happened. Kawoom! All the forces of evil leashed against us. And that's what it says here. And we'll go prove this from the Bible. Now, if Paul, writing this Ephesian letter, now this isn't the book of Ephesians. Did you know that? How many of you knew it wasn't the book of Ephesians? Anybody here know it wasn't the book of Ephesians? It's called the book of Ephesians, but it's not the book of Ephesians.
Oh, it's written to all the churches.
It's a circular, what we call a general epistle to all the churches. So it's written to us today, to churches in our respective churches, wherever we are members. It's written to those churches. To be able to stand against the methods, the secret methods, the mystery methods of the diabolo, of the devil. He has many methods and many secret, what we call secret weapons. He has secret weapons. So let's be able to stand against the secret methods, weapons of the devil. Because not is to us the conflict. That word parley there, that means to wrestle in close quarters. Have you ever wrestled much, Schrader? You like wrestling? Strong. The wrestling in close quarters, this term here was a term that the Romans used and the Greeks used when they did the Olympic wrestling matches. And this meant to wrestle in close quarters. Against blood and flesh. Blood and flesh. It says that our wrestling is not against blood and flesh. Our flesh and blood. What's that mean?
It's not against other humans.
It's not in the world. What is behind us is that which is from outer space, other dimensions. We don't wrestle against, basically, our big problem is not in the world. It's the forces that are behind those in the world. But against the rulers, the archaes, against the authorities, against the world grabbers. It is cosmokrataros. Cosmokrataros. That means the universe grabbers. Who is the great universe grabber?
Lucifer,
Satan. Did he try to grab the whole universe and wrest it out of the hands of God himself? Yes, he did. So we're wrestling against world grabbers, cosmos grabbers, of darkness, of this darkness, against spiritual forces, spiritual armies. Is this scaring you? It's real. Against spiritual armies of the evil in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God in order that ye may be able to resist, stand against, in the day of evil, and we will have evil days. And all things having worked out and down to stand. Stand therefore, having been clothed around your loins with truth, and tying on the breastplate of righteousness, and shoeing yourself with underbinders of the gospel of peace, and taking up the shield of faith by which you're able to stand all of the arrows and darts, poison darts, of the evil one, having been equipped with fire to quench. Now these arrows are fiery arrows. They're poison and they're fiery arrows. But the word of God will quench them. And the helmet of salvation ye take, and the sword of the Spirit, which is the very edicts, decrees, and word of God. Now, Matthew 16:18. Jesus is talking to his church. Peter has just made his great confession of faith. He said, "You are Peter. You are Petros, a little rock. But upon this gigantic foundational stone, great big Petra, I shall be building my church, and the gates of hell shall not be able to wrestle her down." Now, what did we make? We made a positive statement there. The gates of hell will not be able to wrestle her down. But what does it tell us secondarily?
That there will be struggle.
There will be struggle. Ephesians, the sixth chapter. Now, let's go to the book of Job. Now, we're studying church history. I want you to see this. Now, this is the man. He really lived. Job is not a figment of people's imagination. By the way, the book of Job is one of the greatest novels in history. Did you know that? People have studied the book of Job all over. The literature of the book of Job is fantastic as a literary masterpiece. But it tells us a whole lot more than be literary. It's not just a literary masterpiece. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And the man was blameless and upright, fearing God and turning away from evil. Wouldn't it be nice if the world could say that about you? Okay. Now let's see what this happened to this poor fellow. Seven sons and three daughters were born to him. In his possession he had 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, that means 1,000 oxes, 500 female donkeys, and very many servants. And that man was the greatest in all the men of the East. He was the greatest. He was the richest man in all the East. Now, if you've got money to where you can pay your rent and buy your house and you don't have a payment on your house and all this kind of stuff, consider yourself very lucky in America today. You're very lucky. The idea of the system is to keep you broke and keep you working and paying taxes and keep on paying interest on your house, which costs 10 times more than the house costs, paying interest on your cars, which cost you 3 or 4 times more than the car cost, and to the bleed you dry with medical bills and insurance and insurance and insurance and insurance, insurance for poor. And that's the story. That's the plan. If you can get around that plan, you're real lucky, where you can actually own something without owing any money on it. The system also bleeds you dry all of your life and all of your savings, and then you get to pay again tax on the savings when you take it out when you need it. You already paid taxes on it once. You get to pay taxes on it again. Then when you get old, your medical bills are so high and your insurance bills are so high that you will spend all your money just trying to stay alive until you croak. That's the plan. That's the master plan. If you can get around that, you're doing real good. Now, this man had it all. He had it all, didn't he? And his sons used to go and hold a feast in the house of each one of his on his day, on his birthday. And they would send and invite their sisters to eat and drink with them. And it came about, now by the way, this is the reason why that the Jehovah's Witnesses don't celebrate birthdays. Did you know that? They use this for a reason for that. How many of you knew that? That's why. Okay, you did. They use this for a reason why you don't celebrate birthdays. But is there anything wrong with this? No. And it came about when the days that the feasting had completed their cycle that Job would send and consecrate them, rising up early in the morning, offering burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, perhaps my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. And then Job did this all the time as a habit, continually. This is a real story. This isn't a fairy tale. This is a real story. There was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord. Who are these sons of God? Who are these, Christina? We studied that here a while back. No, these are angels. These are angels. These are angels. No, these are angels. Now, there was a day when the sons of God, Bnei Ha'elohim, all right, when they came to present themselves before the Lord, Satan also came among them because he is one of the creations and the sons of God, so to speak. Now, in the Old Testament, the sons of God are called angels are called the sons of God. In the New Testament, huios to theou, we're called heirs of God or sons of God when we've been born again and added unto his churches. We're called heirs or sons of God. In the Old Testament, we're called servants, and the angels are called sons. In the New Testament, angels are called servants, and those that worship the Lord in truth are called sons of God. There's a little difference between the Old and the New Testament. Just thought I'd throw that one out for you. You see that rooster up there? He's watching me preach. See that? That bird. Got to get his dose of the gospel. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them, the adversary. That's what Satan means, Satanos. His name was Lucifer in Latin before, it was Hillel in Hebrew, which means light carrier, but he became the author of darkness and rather than not light. In Genesis 1 or 2, it says, We ha'aretz, hatiatuhu vavuhu, we hoshuk el pene hamayim, we ruah elihim, merit pecheth el pene hamayim. It says, and the earth she had become formless and void, and darkness was over the faces of the deep. Darkness, that was Satan, darkness. Satan had caused it. And verse number 7, and the Lord said to Satan, now who's the Lord here? Who is he?
Jesus.
Jesus. in his pre-incarnate form, he said to Jesus, "Where did you come from?" And then as Satan answered the Lord and said, "From roaming about on the earth and walking around on it." And the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered? Have you set your heart upon Job?" That's what he meant. Have you set your heart, your mind, and all your energies upon Job? Peyton? Annabelle? Christine? Christina? Schrader? You can put your name right there. If you are going to Philip, Maryland, this is you right here. Have you set your heart upon Job? Are you obsessed with Job, Satan? Are you obsessed with him? Is he on your mind all the time because he loves me? Mm-hmm. Satan will strike at those that you love the most to get you. How did Satan mess up in the garden?
He went after Eve,
which was the object of Adam's love. Mm-hmm. She was part of him. So she got him, or he got her, that is, and then she got him. Goes after that. Satan will always have his secret weapons after you. The secret weapons of Satan. Satan's secret weapons, what are they? "For there is no one like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil." He just doesn't like evil. He turns away from evil. So you can't get him. From what he has, you can't touch him. Then Satan answered, "Lord, does Job fear God for nothing? What have you done for him? Why does he fear you? Because you have been so grateful to him and so gracious to him. Yesterday morning, I preached on preventative grace, didn't I? Preventative grace. That comes from the Latin word preventare. Now, it didn't mean to prevent. It's proventare. It means to provide beforehand. Provide beforehand preventative grace. God had graced Job with all kinds of stuff. All kinds of stuff. A wife, children that he loved, that respected him. He had servants. He had slaves. He had camels. By the way, if you study in what we call critical biblical criticism, they'll say they didn't have any camels back then. This was before camels. They didn't have any camels here, but we know that they did, because now they have found coins and they have found inscriptions that go back to this time. By the way, this is the oldest book in the Bible. Do you have a question? No. This is the oldest book in the Bible. And they had camels. Does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not made a hedge about him and his house and all that he has on every side? Does God sometimes protect you? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We know that now. You have blessed his work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. Put forth your hand now and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face. Take it away, and he'll hate you. He'll curse you. Take it away. Then the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, all that he has..." God wasn't going to do it, did he? Did God touch him? No. But he allowed Satan to do that. In what way and what secret weapon can Satan work on you? And what secret weapon? Can he turn your friends against you? Can he turn your spouse against you? Can he cause you to lose your job and all your income? You better believe it. "Behold, all that he has is in your power, and do not put forth your hand on him." So Satan departed from the presence of the Lord, happy and cheery and just rejoicing. Why is it, Annabelle, why is this book here? Why do we have this book in the Bible? You know, How about Peyton? For you. For you. This Bible, this book is in the Bible for you, Philip. Christina, Marilyn, this book's here for you. Mm-hmm. It's for me. I need it. Now it happened on the day that his sons and his daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. Eating, drinking wine. Now there's nothing wrong with eating, drinking wine here. People say, oh, see, they were getting drunk and all this. Well, maybe they were getting drunk. But wine in the Bible is a type of festivity. Jesus, the first miracle that Jesus did was what?
Turned water into wine.
He turned water into wine. But people say, oh, it's only grape juice.
No.
It's not what it says. Mm-mm. It's wine. Now, and the Jehovah's Witnesses use all of this here. You know, this was all bad, so we don't celebrate birthdays. That's the reason why we don't celebrate birthdays. Because of all this is bad. This was all bad. No. There's nothing wrong with what they did. They were celebrating. They were visiting each other. They were having a good time. They were having dinner. And they were making toast to each other, probably. And just saying, may the Lord bless you and all that you do, little sister and big brother and all of this. And they were happy and they were communing with each other. And something happens. In their oldest brother's house. Then a messenger came to Job saying, the oxen were plowing and the donkeys feeding beside them. And the Sabians, look at these guys, these Sabians. These people from Sheba. The Sabians attacked and took them, and they also slew the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you. Now some of his property has been stolen. Some of his property has been stolen. So what happens? What's Satan do to you? First of all, he starts taking your wealth sometimes. Have you ever known somebody that was rich one day and poor the next? And how does people do that? Well, I know how about we lost about $385,000 from that woman over there on the coast. That was a charlatan, and she stole over $900 million from people. And I didn't trust that woman, did I? Marilyn. I didn't trust her, did I? I said, let's get the money out of there, but it became too late. She stole it all. Stole it all. Gone. Whoof. Zip. Gone. Do you think Satan used that woman? She got a lot of people. Got a lot of people. Got a lot of people. $900 million. And you know what? She's out walking the streets today still. She went to prison for a short time, but she's out walking the streets. Still out walking the streets so she can do it again. Now, she hid that money someplace. I alone have escaped. Now he was still speaking, and another came also and said, the fire of God fell down from heaven. Now this isn't the fire of God that fell down from heaven. What are they talking about?
It was like asteroid or sulfur or...
This could have been a lightning bolt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lightning bolt. You know, people get killed by lightning all the time. There was a guy right out here in our neighborhood was out here visiting his mother. And nobody heard from him for a day or two. And they found him out here dead. He was struck by lightning, by a bolt of lightning out here. That was not too long ago. So a bolt of lightning fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them. And I alone has escaped to tell you. Now what's going to happen? They're out there in a lightning storm. I remember one time when I was in Fish Lake Valley. I was out bathing in the hot spring out there. And I was on the way back. And a big flash flood occurred. I mean, the ground was roaring and rumbling. And there was a river 2 feet wide, 2 miles wide that wasn't there before and about this deep. Just roaring and shaking. I took Marilyn out there and showed you where that was, didn't I? I walked through that thing. And it wasn't raining down there at all. It was raining in the mountains. It had rained 24 inches of rain in an hour, they said. And it was all down there on top of me. I'm pretty sure that Satan had something to do with that. Destruction. He's in all the storms. He's in all the destruction, isn't he? I walked through that. I drove my truck in there about a half a mile, three quarters of a mile into it. And the truck quit. It wouldn't run anymore. Well, I'm here in the middle of this flood. And I'm thinking it's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. So if I stay in that truck, I may not be here. So I got out and I started walking. Except it was very dark. Now the skies were just black. And lightning started running horizontal on the ground. Running horizontal on the ground. Running like that. Lightning strikes across like that on the ground. Just rolling. And it just looked like it was like a tumbleweed rolling with fire in it. That's what it looked like. Rolling balls of lightning. And I got through finally a mile and a half of this deep of water I got through. And I got out there on dry ground and I was heading out of there and it began to pour down rain on me. And I mean my shoes were full of mud and gravel. Rocks were rolling this big all over the place. This was a horrendous missile of Satan. And I walked through that. I got on the outside of it and I said, well, I got it made now. Now all I got to do is walk 20 miles. 27 miles, actually. Back door in the middle of the night in the storm. Out in Fish Lake Valley. I was on the Silver Peak Road. I got out there and it started pouring down rain. And then lightning started running right in front of me. And one bolt of lightning struck in front of me and blinded me. I couldn't see. It blinded me. That could have hit me, huh? If it hit me, I probably wouldn't be here preaching today. Okay? But I experienced this very terrible thing like they're seeing here. I think it was 11 places, maybe 17 places that the road was washed out. I kept feeling the road for 7 miles. I felt the road because I couldn't see the road. And I felt where the road was. Because it was hard in the side of it. I'd get off the side and I'd get back into the road where the ground was hard. And I'd just keep walking like this, walking, walking, walking blind. And I got out there and finally my left eye began to open up. When I got to the road, I saw a car coming. And I waved them down. I had two guns stuck in my pants. Muddy and terrible looking shape. And I think they were scared to death of me when they stopped me. And they said, what happened to you? And I said, I'm in a flash flood. I said, can you take me back to Dyer Post Office? They said, no, we're not going that way. And I said, well, you're not going that way. That road was washed out there. I said, I just came through that flash flood. So they agreed to take me back. I went down there and I went in. The next day I went out there in my truck. The bottom of my wheels were this high off the ground. Like that. The bottom of the wheels. Brush had and tree limbs and everything had washed underneath every one of my wheels, and it was like they were on jack stands. The road was washed away. And here that truck was standing up there, and I found out what was wrong with it. A piece of brush, a limb, had got underneath there and twisted my gas line and kinked it, and so it was cut off. And that's why it died. I got up in there, I almost walked underneath that car, straightened that out, got in there, got in the thing, which was a trick. That far off the ground, started it right up, and away I went, like that. Ball lightning, flash floods, this is all fried out of Satan's realm. It consumed them, and I have long have escaped. All your sheep from ball lightning. And verse number 17, while he was still speaking, another came and said, the Chaldeans formed three bands and made a raid on the camels and took them and slew the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped. Now he's losing all of his sheep, all of his cattle, and all of his slaves. And this is property. Verse number 18, while he was still speaking, another came and said, your sons and your daughters were eating and drinking wine in the oldest brother's house, and behold, a great wind from across the wilderness struck the four corners of the house, and it fell on the young people, and they all died, and I alone have escaped to tell you. Boy, He lost all of his valuable possessions and his children. And all that he has left is a contentious, whining, grumpy wife. All the good stuff's gone. All he's got is a contentious, mean, vicious wife. She's mad. This woman is mad. All day Nailom skipped. Then Job arose, tore his robe, shaved his head, and he fell to the ground and worshipped God. He didn't start, "I hate you, what you doing to me? If you get all this straightened out, I'll worship you again." He didn't say that, did he? He worshipped God. And he said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return. And the Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. And blessed be the name of the Lord." Through all this, Job did not sin, nor did he blame God. The secret weapons of Satan. We know they're not quite so secret, are they? We know about some of these, don't we? And now let's go on and look in the second chapter. "Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan was also came among them to present himself." Who's the sons of God?
Angels.
"And then the Lord said to Satan, 'Where have you come from?' And Satan answered to the Lord and said, 'From roaming about on the earth and walking around upon it.'" 1 Peter 5 and 8 says that Satan, the devil, is like a roaring lion walking to and fro, seeking whom he may what?
Devour.
And that's you-ins and us-ins. Okay? "Then the Lord said to Satan, 'Have you considered my servant Job? Have you got him still possessed on your mind? Are you want him? Are you still obsessed with Job? For is no man like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil, and he still holds fast his integrity, although you incited against him to ruin him without cause.' And Satan answered and said to the Lord, 'Skin for skin.'" Now he is going to touch his health. Now he's going to touch his health. "Now I just experienced, and my son just experienced, my daughter-in-law had cancer for 13 years. And they treated her aggressively for 13 years. And when she left this world, there wasn't much left of her. There wasn't much left." Satan can use disease. 16 years ago, I got cancer. 16 years ago. And I went to a doctor here that absolutely did everything wrong with a biopsy that he could do. He just spread the cancer is what he did. And then when they did radiation on me, and that liked to kill me. They did chemotherapy on me, and I had strokes. And they operated on me. And the doctor went in there, and we went in there. Marilyn and I went into the doctor after all this was said and done. I was gutted and put back together. And the doctor went in there, and he said, "The cancer spread. I don't know whether I got it all or not. And it's the worst cancer cell you can have, the most aggressive, worst cell you can have." But he said, "I know God loves you." He said, "There's nothing else we can do for you." He said, "I would not tell you to go on radiation. Anybody else would do it. I would not put you on chemotherapy. Anybody else would do it." He said, "But I think that God is going to take care of you. And you go on and live the rest of your life the best you can. But," he said, "I want you to know you've got a problem here." And I've had a problem there ever since. But I have ignored it. For the last 5 years, they wanted to put me on chemotherapy and radiation. And I said, "I can die well on my own without your help. I don't need your help." "Well, I'm here, but I'm not like I was before." Marilyn was describing me one time when I was young, when she saw me and I was all this big, robust guy with a 50-inch chest and all that stuff. Great, my arms were this big around, like telephone poles. I could pick up 1,000 pounds, and I'm not kidding. I could throw wood with both hands, 20-pound pieces, like they were feathers. Didn't matter. But I'm not that way anymore, people. The old missiles of Satan got me. But I still love my Lord. What's left of me? And this may be the last sermon I ever preach, too. Who knows? So what? This is what the Lord wants me to do. Lord said, Satan, have you still got your mind on him? And he holds fast to his integrity. And then Satan said unto him, skin for skin. Yes, all that a man has he will give for his life. Won't you? People will spend every dime they got to try to stay alive. Because when it comes down to property and life, life is more important, isn't it? You'll sell your home. You'll do whatever you need to do to stay alive. Have you ever seen anybody kidnap somebody? You ever heard of people kidnapping people? And they kidnap people and said, they'll do this down in Mexico a lot. I'm going to send a finger. I'm going to send an ear. I'm going to send another body part until you send the money. They do that. Do you know what I'm talking about? They do this. They do this around here too. You just don't hear about it so much. This is kidnapping and extortion. Extortion. Because people will pay. When you've got a loved one in danger or something, they will pay whatever it takes. The Catholic Church started the heinous doctrine of purgatory. And say, well, your dad, your mom is in purgatory, and it's going to cost you that farm there, over there, that 10 acres over there, to get them out. And then they come back again and say, well, there's one hand left alive, left still in purgatory. We need more. This is historical. This really happened. Satan's devices. Satan, how he inspires people. Howard, put forth your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse you to your face. And the Lord said to Satan, behold, he is in your power, but only save his life. Then Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore boils and the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. What do you think he had? Mm. What did this boy have?
Staph infection.
He had staph infection. That's bad. And he took potsherd to scrape himself while he was sitting among the ashes. Why was he sitting among ashes?
He probably burned all of his clothes. Well, don't they do that as a ceremonial?
They did that as a ceremonial thing of mourning and worship.
Yeah, that's right.
He's worshiping.
Yeah.
He's sitting among ashes because he's worshiping God still. He's sick and miserable pain, but he's worshiping God. He's worshiping God. And his wife said to him, this is the only thing he had left, Phil.
Notice Satan didn't touch her.
She's doing fine. Mm-hmm. She just mean.
He didn't have to.
That's what I mean. That's my point. He's like, yeah, she's right where I want her.
Then his wife said to him, do you still hold fast your integrity? Curse God and die. Get out of here. Just go curse God and die. That's a wonderful woman. Isn't it? You like to have that kind of moral support?
Oh, yeah.
I haven't heard a giggle out of you there, Christina. This is an old boy doing this. You'd have been laughing a lot. This isn't the woman getting beat up here. It's the guy. Uh-huh. Now, not only does he have a mean, wicked wife, but now he's got three of the worst friends he could possibly have. Now, Satan is using them. He turned his wife against him. Remember what I said a while ago? Turn your wife against you, your spouse against you. Now here we have Job's three friends and all of his adversity that he had come upon, and each one of them with his own place, Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and so far the Naamathite, and they made an appointment together to come and sympathize with him and to comfort him. And they lifted up their eyes into distance and did not recognize him. And they raised their voices and wept, and each one of them tore his robe, and they threw dust over their heads. Then he sat down on the ground with him and said, "What have you done wrong? What did you do wrong, Job? What did Job do wrong?"
Nothing.
Ooh, the Mia. Not a thing. And they completely, the whole rest of this book is how that they mistreat Job. That's what it's all about. Now let's go to the end of the book. We get to go to the end. The finis. In the 42nd chapter. And verse now 8, it says, in the 42nd chapter, "Now therefore take yourselves 7 bulls and 7 rams and go to my servant Job." These are the 3 rats. Mm-hmm. The 3 musketeers, you know. These are the 3 missiles of Satan. As if Job didn't already have enough, his wife is a scoundrel. And by the way, she's not heard of anymore. Something happened to that old gal. She's gone. She's out of the picture now. "Go to my servant Job and offer up burnt offerings for yourselves, and my servant Job will pray for you." My servant Job will pray for you and your sins, how you have abused him, because you are the missiles of Satan. You are the secret weapons of Satan. "For I will accept him so that I may not do with you according to your folly, because you have not spoken of me what is right, and my servant Job has." Job was depressed. Job was saying, "I need a lawyer between me and God." Well, we do have a lawyer between me and God. Who is it?
Jesus,
our advocate. "So Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, Zophar the Naamathite went and did as the Lord told them, and the Lord accepted Job. And the Lord restored the fortune to Job when he had prayed for his friends. And the Lord increased all that Job had twofold. Then all of his brothers and all of his sisters and all who had known him before came to him, and they ate bread with him in his house. And they consoled him with and comforted him for all the evil that the Lord had brought upon him," or allowed to be brought upon him, actually. "And each one gave him a piece of money, a piece of silver, and each one a ring of gold. And the Lord blessed the latter days of Job more than his beginning. And he had 14,000 sheep, 6,000 camels, 1,000 yoke of oxen, and 1,000 female donkeys. And Job had 7 sons and 3 daughters." And these are Job's daughters. The Masonic Lodge gets Job's daughters, their order of Job's daughters, right out of this. "And he named the first Jeminah, and the second Kezah, and the third Karin Hapuf. And in all the land no women were found so fair as Job's daughters, and their father gave them inheritance among their brothers." Now that's unusual too. Mm-hmm. "And after this Job lived 140 years and saw his sons and his grandsons 4 generations. Job died an old man full of days." Now, he didn't die broke, did he? What's this tell us? What's this story? Ephesians the 6th chapter, Matthew 16:18, and the book of Job. What does it tell us?
Never lose faith in the Lord.
Don't lose faith in the Lord, but the devil's out there. Don't be dodging bullets all the time, but do duck now and then. Mm-hmm. Learn to duck. Now, in church history, we have studied how Adam and Eve, how that Satan got to Eve, and it went into the human race through Adam. Satan deceived Eve, didn't he? The woman was deceived, but the man knew what was going on, and he diligently, premeditatedly, with a forethought and malice, stole from that tree. And he knew better. Eve was deceived. He did it intentionally. And by that, He brought sin into the human race. The woman cannot pass on the sin nature to the child. Could Adam have not taken from that tree of the knowledge of good and evil? And remember, the tree of the knowledge of what? Name it. Of what? Number one.
Good.
So he saw, when he took of that, he saw how great God was. Mm-hmm. And he saw how good God was. And he saw how patient God was. He saw all these things, and he saw how low he was. How low he had become. That was bad. We have a great God. A great God, don't we? One that's able to work all things out in the end. How many bad things happened to you in your life? Did you have bad things happen to you in your life? How many? Have you ever had church children turn against you? You had your mates turn against you? You have your friends turn against you? You have disease? You have sickness? You had financial devastation? You know who you can blame on this? Now, I'm telling you now, you can break yourself. If you're rich, you can break yourself. Just go out there and spend it like a drunken sailor. And just do what you want to, and pretty soon it's all gone. What you have is a gift of God, and you need to manage it well. Don't be foolish with it. But remember, everything is a gift of God. Everything you have is a gift of God. Your health to work. Jason makes a good living, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. What happened if we went, foof, what happened if he just died on the job? He's trained your children, hasn't he? Mm-hmm. Trained them, that's backups. That's backups. What if lightning struck them all? What if they were all someplace and the house blew up from a gas leak or something like that? These things happen to us. They happen every day to people. But that's not the most important thing in the world, is it? The most important thing you can do ever is to believe on the Lord Jesus Christ and you shall be saved. Believe that He died on the cross of Calvary, that God came down to the earth to ransom you from your sins. That He lived His life for you. He gave His life for you. Here in the book of Job, we see all of this. And this is before Christ, before the pre-incarnate Christ dealing with Satan there. But now we have the carnate Christ. After He became flesh and dwelt among us. Kaiho logos sarxagenito. And the Word, the Jehovah flesh, He became and dwelt among us. And we beheld the glory of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. For no man has seen God at any time, but the only begotten God, the one being inseparable from the bosom of God, that one has led Himself out. We see all of this. Not only did He lead Himself of eternity into space and time, but He died and crawled on that cross. And we might have life. Satan has founded many religions. Many religions. Have you ever been confused about where to go and what to do and which one is really right? Have you? Yeah. You know why? Those are the secret weapons of Satan. What he's done to people. There are many real good Mormons. There are many real good Jehovah's Witnesses. There are some people that are Muslims that probably are pretty good people if they don't practice a religion. They do, they won't be. You see all of these. Mary Baker Eddy and Christian Science. Christian Science. You see the Christian Science Journal and all this Christian Science. It's not Christian and it's not science. Mm-hmm. Period. These are all emissaries. These are all secret weapons of Satan. And we go back into the history of God's people. Back here, we saw the Egyptian bondage. For 400 years they were down in bondage, and then He leads them out. And then Satan gets involved with them and puts fear in them, and they won't go into the land. Moses gets mad. He strikes the rock the second time when God told him to speak to it because it was a type of the coming of Christ. And so he broke this type. And God, it cost him his life. But God loved him. And a lot of people there at the end, see, there's Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, isn't there? And they say, when Moses wrote that Moses was the most humble man in the eyes of God upon the earth, and that God took him. I have no problem believing that Moses wrote that. A lot of people say, well, somebody penned that last bit there. I think it's inspired of God, and I think Moses wrote it. I think he knew it. If we can have all kinds of prophecies like Jacob made in the last part of the book of Exodus and Genesis there, in Genesis that is, if he can prophesy what would happen over the next 10,000 years, so to speak, I can accept that. By faith you accept things. And I'm not trying to tell you by faith just leave your brain outside when you come to church. Bring it with you. The Bible is correct historically, medically, scientifically, and archaeologically. A lot of people will say, oh, the Bible is correct, all right, but not according to history and not according to us. And you'll find this in systematic theology books. I don't believe that. I believe it's all there. We see all of this happening. We see the law given by Moses. And then we see the history of Israel. And we see that God, did God plan on Israel having a king? Yeah. Who was the king that they were supposed to have? David. And why does it tell us that? In the last two chapters of the book of Genesis, it tells us there would not be a ruler depart from between Judah's knees until Shiloh came. That says they're going to have a king. They will have a king. And the king will, that the kingdom of Israel will culminate in the coming of the Messiah. He will be the last king of Israel. Now, Israel would like to go start their services over there again and sacrifices in the city of Jerusalem, won't they? If they do, it's an absolute blasphemy to God. It, from the book of Hebrews, it tells us there is no more sacrifices to make. The ultimate sacrifice is made. We have one high priest, which is above all and beyond anything else before. We see David, the house of David. We see Judah and Israel split. Who do you think caused this? Satan. To destroy the nation of Israel. The first king, now there was Jeroboam and Rehoboam. Rehoboam, always remember that, re means back again. The people of Israel begged Rehoboam, we will follow you to the last man if you'll lower the taxes and take off the burdens of us, because the Lord said, you ask for a king, I'll tell you what he's going to do. He's going to use you up. Every man was conscripted as a slave for so many months of the year. He was a slave for the king. You were in the king's army also. You did all of this for the king. You were his servants. They had high taxes, people. High taxes for why? You know, it's okay if you pay high taxes. Did you know that? Taxes are not wrong, as long as the government does what they say they're going to do with it. But they will put it in their own pockets, and all the scoundrels and rats will be out there munching on filet mignon while you're eating bologna. That's not wrong. But he said he will do you in. He will take your daughters for his wives and concubines. How many wives does Solomon have? You remember?
1,001.
The one was Bathsheba. I mean, not Bathsheba, but Sheba, the queen of Sheba. She was the one. Well, after Solomon came Rehoboam. Rehoboam said, the elders counseled to him and said, please lower the taxes. He said, my dad's finger was like, His thigh was like my little finger, and my thighs are like his whole body. What he did to you, I'm going to do 10 times more. And so the nation split. Now when they split, and this is where we come into Israel and Judah. There were 10 There were 10 tribes that took off and 2 tribes that stood. All right? 2 tribes that stood. And that's what we call Judah.
And they stayed with Rehoboam.
Yeah. And that's under Rehoboam. Rehoboam was rehash of what old Solomon did. And then we have Abijah, son of Rehoboam, Asa, Jehoshaphat, Jehoram, Ahaziah, Athaliah, queen mother of the king Ahaziah, okay, because she was actually queen. And then we have Joash, and then we have Amaziah, and we have Uzziah, we have Jotham, we have Ahaz, we have Hezekiah, we have Manasseh, we have Ammon, we have Josiah, we have Jehoahaz, and Jehoiakim, and then we have Jehoiakim, son of Jehoiakim, and then we have Zedekiah. And then we have the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple by Nebuchadnezzar. All right. Then we have the house of Jeroboam. Jeroboam the first, and then Nabab. The house of Baasha and Elah. The house of Zimri. Then we have the house of Omri. These are all rulers. Okay? And Ahab, you know how great he was. And then we have Ahaziah and Joram. Then we have Jehu, the house of Jehu, and Jehoahaz, Jehoash, Jeroboam the second, Zechariah, son of Jeroboam, the house of Shalom, son of Yabesh, and the house of Gadi, Menahem, and Pekahiah, and the house of Pekah, son of Ramaliahu, and the house of Hoshea, the son of Elah. And then we have the Hosmanean kingdom of Israel, from 130 to 37 B.C. Matthias, the Hasmonean, Judas Maccabees, Jonathan Maccabees, the first, you know, the first and second books of Maccabees. Maccabees is real, genuine history in the Apocrypha. And then we have Simon, the Thasi of Maccabees. And we have John Hyrcanus. Now we have kings and high priests coming on down. We're getting over here in almost to the New Testament times. Aristobulus, the first king of the high priests. Alexander, Janius. We have Queen Shalom with Hyrcanus the second, priest and king. Priest and king, what's wrong with that?
King wasn't supposed to be
the priest. And king weren't supposed to be the same. Okay, and then we have King Aristobulus, king and high priest. We have Hyrcanus the second, priest. And then we have Antigonus, the second Matthias, the last Hosmanean king. Then we have Jonathan, Aristobulus. And who was supposed to be on the throne when... Who was supposed to be on the throne when Jesus was born?
Supposed to be the line of...
The line of the tribe of Judah, which was Joseph.
Yeah.
Which would have been his earthly father. And then we have... How many of you have heard of Antony and Cleopatra? Mm-hmm. Antony and Cleopatra decided to interfere with the nation of Israel, or Judah, and they appointed a man by the name of Herod. Herod, that's how Herod got. Then we have Herod the Great, the king of the Jews, and then we had Herod Archelaus and Herod Antipas and Herod Philip the Tetrarch and Herod Agrippa and Agrippa the Second of Judea. And that was all the way up to almost 100 A.D. There's something wrong with that ender. What's wrong with Esau's descendants being on the throne of Israel?
They're not the right line.
That is a missile of Satan. That's a missile of Satan. That's his secret weapon. The secret weapon of Satan, the missiles of Satan. He put the child Esau I loved and Jacob I hated. What is it? Jacob I loved and Esau I hated, and Esau's descendants on the throne? What's wrong with that?
Satan was working. Yeah,
Now we got all the way up to the time of Jesus. Now, high boy, we're all the way up to the time of Jesus, and that's as far as we're going to go today. Do you have any question? Did you learn something?
Yes. Okay, so you said about the Jews trying to rebuild the temple, and I know that, but where does that red heifer fit into that? Because I know they're still looking for that red heifer. Is it to sacrifice, or is it the sign of their temple going to be rebuilt? What's...
Okay, how many of you heard about the red heifer business? Okay, first of all, in 2 Maccabees, the second chapter, it tells you where the ashes of the red heifer are. They're hid in a cave on the mountain where Moses, and it's in Jordan. They're hid in a cave on a mountain where Moses looked down, and I've been on that mountain, looking over there into the promised land. Okay? But today, they don't want any of that, by the way. They already have arks, and they already have all the clothing and all the vessels of the temple, so they can go in and worship God and do sacrifices again, which according to the book of Hebrews is blasphemy. And unforgivable. But they want to do it anyway, because they did not accept the Messiah. So they have to have the ashes of the red heifer. Why are they looking for this perfect red heifer? Because they're going to sacrifice it, and then they're going to slaughter it, and they're going to burn it all the way till it's nothing but ashes. And then they're going to take those ashes and mix with water, and they're going to consecrate that temple. Now, ashes, real ashes from hardwood, you make what out of it, Marilyn?
Lye.
Lye. It's got lye in it. And that's where you have lye, homemade lye soap. Now, lye soap is a antibacterial thing, medically. Mm-hmm. They're going to take the ashes of the red heifer, and they took the ashes of the red heifer in the Old Testament, and they went into a leprous house. How many of you ever heard of a leprous house? What was in that leper's house? Staph infection. Mm-hmm. They take the ashes of the red heifer and they mix them with water and they paint the walls and sprinkle the walls with all this stuff. Now, if that staph infection still stays there, it keeps growing, it's mold is what it was. But staph infection, if it keeps growing, burn the house down. Burn it down. That's what, these are real scientific and medical laws in the Bible. So the ashes of the red heifer is for them to burn this red heifer, take the ashes from the red heifer, and to consecrate this area where they're going to put the temple and all of the, what we call the tools of the temple, all of the furniture and everything of the temple is going to be consecrated with the ashes of the red heifer. So they're still looking for a red heifer. But the Bible says that the ashes of the red heifer were hidden with the Ark of the Covenant and the tabernacle. And it's hidden in that mountain. And Israel will not have them until the Messiah comes back. And they find this, and then they can offer their services, which will begin that 1,000-year reign of Christ on the earth. The legitimate reign of David on his throne. Did that help you? Do you have any other questions? Anything? Anything at all? Yes, Christina.
I know it's in the Bible, but I'm not sure exactly where we should be separated of state and church. What verses?
That's in the New Testament. That's the polity of the church. The polity of church. Romans, the 12th chapter. We're supposed to do honor to the governments, but if they go against to our belief, we do not do that. We're supposed to honor the governments wherever we live, but it's separate from the church. The church and the state are separate. Church and state are separate. Because we live in... Is America in God we trust, really?
No.
Was it ever? Not really.
Maybe not in the government, but within the hearts of people.
Well, that was way later. You know, that didn't go way back into the 1700s and 1600s or whatever. That goes into the 19th century, the 20th century, actually, mm-hmm. when we have that in God we trust. They wanted to do that. There are some believers that were presidents in America. There were some believers. Thomas Jefferson was not a believer. Did you know that? Mm-hmm. They tried to keep saying he was a Christian. He was not a Christian.
No.
He was basically a Gnostic or a deist. He didn't believe in any miracles of God or anything supernatural at all. He just believed that God was an idea. Okay? So we see all of this. And here we are today. What do? We're going to find out what to run from and what to cling to. All right? Anything else? Phil, you got a question? Did you learn something today? A lot of something. Watch out for the secret weapons. Oh, yes, Christy.
So, after Jesus' death, then we have the church.
Actually, we have it before his death.
Before his death.
Yeah, we have it at Galilee. That's when the church begins at Galilee.
So then it's just called the church?
It is an ecclesia. We'll get into that later.
Okay.
As we go. When we get, this is almost like next week. This is going to be our next class. When we get into the church, we're going to go through the ministry of Christ. We're going to see how he called out the church and see what the church was supposed to do. Okay?
Okay.
Yes.
And I know you went over this with me already, but I'm going to ask again. In the book of Genesis 6, 2, where it says the sons of God?
Yes.
And then again, we just read the sons of God.
Yes, those are the angels. But the sons of God, the angels, cohabited with women there and raised a race of Nephilim.
Okay,
the Nephilim aren't sons of God.
Got it, because they were...
Yes. They're almost like sons of Satan.
I was going to say, the sons of God there are fallen angels.
Yes.
Okay, they're not the ones that are worshiping.
Those are fallen
God.
Angels. Those are not the ones that don't marry or anything like that. These are the fallen angels.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, there's still angels over the big title, but then there's demons.
They're still
spirits,
sons of God, but,
yeah.
And that was a term for angels.
Yeah.
You got a question? All right. Anything else? Anything else? All right. Brother Phil, would you dismiss us in prayer, brother?
Yes. Heavenly Father, we thank you for Dr. Jim and his team.